Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
It's time for the Nick Cale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's Nick Cale.
And we are off and running live here on a Saturday in the A. It is the Nick Cale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. With you for the next 3 hours as we take you guys up until 9 o'clock this morning. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all of you. Hopefully you guys had a great holiday yesterday, enjoying this stretch as we bring 2020 to a close. The phone number, as always, 404-741-0929. That is also our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can get me on Twitter, at Nick Cale, K-A-Y-A-L. Marshall Parker, he is the chairman of the board today. Happy holidays, Marshall.
Happy holidays, Nick.
All right, we are loaded today. Emory Hunt from CBS Sports coming up at 6:40 this morning. We'll talk college football. We'll talk NFL draft with him. When it comes to football, trust me, he's got plenty of opinions. He'll get you set for Georgia, Cincinnati, what the Falcons could do in the draft. Joe Patrick coming up at 7:20. We'll kind of do a little United and Braves with him in hour number two. And then a sports media critic, Dimitri Ravanos, coming up in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. But let me start here because we got a lot of stuff to get to. We're going to do a lot on the Falcons, the Heisman Trophy Award. Also, we'll get ready for the Hawks and the Grizzlies tonight. So a lot of good stuff on tap. But yesterday, great day of sports because, well, at least on paper. Let me reel that back. We thought it would be a pretty entertaining day of sports, and we ended up with one football blowout and five basketball blowouts. But I'll start with the football. As I'm sitting there yesterday watching that Saints-Vikings game, which clearly nobody wanted to play defense. Minnesota more guilty of that than New Orleans. But a game that ended up with 85 combined points. The Saints beat the Vikings 52-33 in the Superdome. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm watching the Saints. And I'm just looking at them and everything they do. And I'm kind of like comparing them to what we will have to watch tomorrow with our Atlanta Falcons. And it's just amazing to me. And none of this is really breaking news. But I'm just blown away with how well-balanced the New Orleans Saints are. I mean, it starts at the top with head coach Sean Payton. Like, here's a guy who, as I pull a Chris Collinsworth there, now here's a guy who all he does is win games. Like, this is a guy who lost his quarterback in Drew Brees for a 9-game period over almost 2 years and went 8-1 without him. Like, think about how good of a run organization this franchise is. I mean, Bill Belichick loses Tom Brady. They can't score. They're 6-8. Cam Newton looks shot. They got a bunch of slow running backs and a bunch of 5'10" wide receivers. They can't score. Sean Payton loses Drew Brees, and while they don't score as much, they just keep on winning games. And it's so interesting to watch. You know, you go from Drew Brees to Teddy Bridgewater, then you go back to Drew Brees to Taysom Hill, and now that Drew Brees is back, although he's not 100%, you can see that his rib injury is still bothering him, Sean Payton still will trot out Taysom Hill for a play, for a couple of plays, not so much a series anymore, but he can still alternate quarterbacks. which you see on a Friday night in high school football in September when the head coach hasn't figured out who his signal caller is going to be. And then they come at you with Alvin Kamara, who I think actually just scored another touchdown 5 minutes ago to get his seventh in the last 20 hours. And when Kamara isn't doing the carrying of the ball or catching passes out of the backfield, then you have Murray. So they got a two-headed monster, a dual-threat running back, and Latavius Murray, who's a guy who will just plunge straight ahead for 4.5 yards a pop. This is a team without Michael Thomas right now, yet they have a 33-year-old Emmanuel Sanders who just slides in, steps right up, and goes for 4 catches for 80 yards. And the way they go about it, they still have so many weapons. Jared Cook is a total mismatch at tight end. And then you get to the defensive side of the ball. They were without Hendrickson, one of their leading sackers in the NFL yesterday, and it really didn't seem to matter. They were able to get to Kirk Cousins in the second half, generate pressure with Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, and they've got studs and leaders at every level of their defense. DeMario Davis is a fantastic linebacker, all-pro caliber. How the Jets ever let him get away is beyond me. Marshawn Lattimore shadowed Justin Jefferson all over the field yesterday, and with like 5 minutes to go in the fourth quarter, Jefferson had like 3 catches for 40 yards on 7 or 8 targets. He ended up getting garbage points and garbage catches in the final 5 minutes of the game when the outcome was no longer in question. Total shutdown, lockdown corner. Malcolm Jenkins, great leader, world champion in the secondary playing safety. You know, it's just I watch them and I compare them to the Falcons. And I know a lot of people want to say, you know, you have a select few in the NFL that are 12-4. You have a few bottom feeders that are 4-12. And largely the league is played between 6-10 teams, 8-8 teams, and 10-6 teams. And the margin is not supposed to be that significant. And a lot of people will tell you that it's not. It's a few plays away. You know, you have a couple of lucky breaks or bounces or a couple of injuries that can make a season go from 6-10 to 10-6. But I'm hard-pressed to watch the Saints and think that the Falcons are even in their stratosphere. I mean, seriously. You watch the balance, the creativity. It's not stats. It's not metrics. It's not numbers. It's just Sean Payton's willingness to run the ball or throw the ball out of any formation with any quarterback at any given point. Like, that's what we need with our next regime of the Atlanta Falcons. From the new GM to the new head coach to the new nucleus to draft picks all the way down. I just was in utter amazement of, and I know the Vikings defense stinks, and Mike Zimmer's got to be livid with how bad they've been this year because they're awful. They can't stop anybody. They didn't even want to tackle Alvin Kamara, and Alvin Kamara is not an overly physical runner. So I can't imagine how the Vikings defense would shiver up and die if they had to actually tackle, I don't know, Dalvin Cook. But you watch that Saints team, and they still have a chance to get the one seed. Only one bye this year in the playoffs. Only, you have the one seed out of 7. Green Bay currently holds that advantage. Assuming they beat the Titans, they should end up the one seed. But the Saints are still competing for a one seed. And I watch the way New Orleans goes about their business, and I put my red and black sunglasses on and try to view it from a Falcons lens and a Falcons perspective, and it's just not close. There's your difference in a championship franchise with stability, with a coach, a quarterback, you know, a culture, an identity, and the personnel. I watched that game yesterday. I'm like, man, how great would it be to get that? Whoever the next GM is, whoever the next coach is, if they can build a 15-year run with guys like that, with that blueprint, with that success. All right, Nick Kale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Here's the other thing. Watching the NBA yesterday, you know, it's interesting. Christmas Day, NBA tradition now. I think it's like 17 years in a row that we've had all these games. By the way, yesterday was the first day we had a college football bowl game on Christmas in, I think, almost 18 years as well. But not one of those games yesterday in the association was competitive. 5 games decided by 13, 39, 28, 23, and 13 points. Kind of felt like watching a college football playoff game, to be honest. So sitting there watching the game, I'm like, man, and I'm watching all these different games. I got the football game on the big TV, and I'm bouncing around on all the NBA games on the smaller TV. Not one game remotely compelling. Denver now 0-2. Dallas now 0-2. Golden State now 0-2. And here's my probably three big takeaways from all the NBA action yesterday on Christmas. I'll start with this one, and I think this one is pretty obvious. It's going to get a lot of attention in headlines, but Kevin Durant is back. Like, Kevin Durant goes down, 2019 NBA Finals, really, really sickening injury. You felt bad for the guy. He goes to Golden State, win the championship, and then gets a devastating injury. And here we are well over a year later, a year and a half later, and it's taken all of two regular season games for me to come to the conclusion, and I think any basketball fan that is tuned in for these games, Kevin Durant's back. 29 points yesterday, 9 of 16 from the floor, 3 of 4 from deep. And oh, by the way, his 29 wasn't even the team's high scorer. That was Kyrie Irving with 37 points as Brooklyn destroyed the Boston Celtics 123-95. I mean, I still have my reservations about Brooklyn playing enough defense to get out of the East and win the NBA Finals. I think they will be in for a big-time struggle against Milwaukee if they don't play defense and commit on that end of the floor. And I certainly don't think they can beat the Lakers in the NBA Finals. But, man, Kevin Durant is... if anybody thought that he was going to relinquish his crown as the most prolific scorer in the NBA... He's quickly reminded you he's in the conversation, and probably by the end of January, it wouldn't surprise me if he's the leading scorer in the NBA. He's got 31 points per game still written all over him. So that was my first big takeaway, is KD's back. Anybody wants to argue that is out of their mind. My second takeaway, and maybe this is a bit of a reach, but it's just a gut feeling on based on what I'm seeing, looking at the team and projecting forward. Guys, I think the Golden State Warriors are done in regards to being a legit NBA championship contender. Like, I think that window has closed. Draymond Green didn't play. I think Draymond Green is on the backside of his career. Steph Curry had, I think, 19 points. Golden State got beat by Milwaukee by almost 40 points yesterday. And Klay Thompson being out is a big issue. Injured again. I get all of that. But good Lord, Golden State, and maybe the biggest, most pleasant surprise was Weissman, the rookie that they took right at the top of the draft. I think the Golden State expectation of the Warriors being one of the Western Conference's elite is over. Tell me at what point, even if, let's say when Klay Thompson does return a year from now, whenever it is, how are they going to derail the Lakers? How are they going to beat the Clippers? I don't even know that they beat the Nuggets. I think the days of Golden State being viewed as one of the marquee franchises that can win an NBA Finals has come and gone. I mean, this is not 2015, 2016, 2018. This Golden State Warriors team, even with the talent they have, guys like Andrew Wiggins, guys like Kelly Oubre, Steph Curry, Draymond Green, they've got Danny Lee, Kent Bazemore, former Atlanta Hawk. This is not the Golden State dynasty from a few years ago. And then my last takeaway in the NBA from yesterday is definitely the Clippers. They beat the Nuggets 121-108. And I think, and right now the Clippers are 2-0, so we're not going to get too carried away. There's still 70 games to go in the season. But there is a feeling that the Clippers are going to go on some sort of revenge tour. And I kind of buy into that. Remember, Kawhi Leonard has got multiple finals MVPs at multiple stops with the Spurs, with the Raptors. So when he went to LA and teamed up with Paul George, the expectation was championship or bust. Well, they didn't even get to the Western Conference Finals last year in the restart in the bubble. They got knocked out in the second round. And there's been a lot of criticism towards Paul George And I think a lot of it justifiably so, but I think Paul George, very proud guy. Kawhi Leonard, world champion. I think the Clippers could go on a tear this year. I'm not going to take them to beat the Lakers in a seven-game series in the Western Conference playoffs or the Western Finals. But that being said, I think the Clippers are hell-bent on revenge, and they know that they have been kind of laughed at and criticized for underachieving last year. And whether or not the whole Paul George, Kawhi Leonard thing will work, you know, the rest days and the maintenance days that both players get, I know it's early, but man, the Clippers look really, really good. All right, 404-741-0929 is the number, 404-741-0929 to get in here on the conversation. You can also text us on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can hit me up on Twitter at Nick Kale, K-A-Y-A-L, Emery Hunt from CBS Sports in about 25 minutes. But coming up next, the three things needed for a Falcons turnaround. And their opponent tomorrow is living proof of it, a prime example. We'll get into that next here on The Nick Kale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. All right, happy Saturday morning, everybody. Welcome back in. Nick Kale Show, a couple hours earlier than normal on your typical Saturday, typically 3 to 6 p.m., but we're riding here early this morning until 9 o'clock on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Radio.com app. Coming up in just about 20 minutes, Emery Hunt from CBS Sports, college football NFL analyst. He's all over everything on the Saturday front, the Sunday front, the draft front, former college football running back and scout. Really well-respected by a lot of NFL head coaches and scouts and GMs. So he's going to talk all things Georgia-Cincinnati with the bowl game coming up, some NFL draft as well, and how that affects the Atlanta Falcons. Falcons and Chiefs, obviously, tomorrow, right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And that's where I want to go now, because not so much about the game, and we'll talk about the game a little bit later on, but, you know, watching that Saints team yesterday and thinking to myself, okay, how can the Falcons get to where the Saints are? Or maybe even better, and maybe even less likely, how do the Falcons get to the level that the Kansas City Chiefs are at? And it came to my attention that there's three things that need to happen for a Atlanta Falcons turnaround. And their opponent tomorrow is a prime example of this, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs. So you need three things. You need culture, you need identity, and you need personnel. And the personnel can be on the field and then also your coaching staff and your front office. But you need culture, you need identity, and you need a personnel. And two of those three can come instantly, culture and identity. One of them takes time, and that's personnel. So from a culture standpoint and an identity standpoint, those things should be instantaneous based on who the GM is that gets hired, based on who the head coach is. And when you watch that new regime and that new era, in 2021, the first week of the season, you should be like, whoa, okay, here's what our culture is. This is our identity. Now, the personnel is going to take time. But right now, the Atlanta Falcons culture is either finding ways to lose, choking, or just not being mentally tough enough to close out their opponents. Their identity, well, they have none. They don't run the ball. They're not a hard-hitting physical defense. And it's just kind of like Matt Ryan dropping back in Dirk Cutter's offense and zipping it around to Calvin Ridley. And that's kind of the identity. That needs to change. And with that comes new personnel. And I think the Kansas City Chiefs are a perfect example of culture, identity, and personnel. And you can point out other teams as well. You know, the same cast of characters that we always see. You know, the Patriots, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Packers, the Saints, the Seahawks. You know, the NFL, we've seen real consistent franchises doing their thing for the better part of two decades now. And it starts with the coach. It starts with the quarterback. It starts with a real savvy front office that hits in the draft, spends a little bit in free agency, and year in and year out is cranking out 10, 11 win teams. But I look at the Kansas City Chiefs as the perfect example. Because here was a franchise kind of struggling, stuck in purgatory. Yeah, they'd have a nice season here and there. And then along came Andy Reid in 2013 after he was let go in Philadelphia after about a dozen years. And Andy Reid goes to Kansas City 7 years ago, and he has Alex Smith becoming his quarterback. Alex Smith leaves the 49ers after Colin Kaepernick took his job. And for about 4 or 5 years, Andy Reid and Alex Smith won games. They threw the ball. They weren't dynamic like they are now, but that was the initial culture, the initial identity. And then the personnel changed. So here's Andy Reid winning 10, 11 games a year. Alex Smith is his quarterback. Pretty good defense. You know, creative offense. Not the Harlem Globetrotters we see on the field now with all the talent and speed they have today. But the culture and the identity was established. And then the personnel continued to get better. And how did they get better? Well, in year one, Andy Reid drafted Travis Kelce. Does anybody remember where Travis Kelce was selected? Yeah, neither do I until I looked it up. 2013 third round pick, 63rd overall. So I believe he was the first pick of the third round. And then in 2016, in the fifth round, the Kansas City Chiefs, with the 165th overall pick, selected Tyreek Hill. So the two most potent receivers for the Kansas City Chiefs, both top five receivers statistically in the NFL this year, were a third round pick 7 years ago and a fifth round pick almost 5 years ago. That's called scouting, folks. That's called drafting. That's called knowing personnel. And then in 2017, when it was clear that Alex Smith could win you games, Alex Smith will not make mistakes. Alex Smith has mobility, but Alex Smith has a ceiling. Deshaun Watson and Mitchell Trubisky go in the draft, and what does Andy Reid do with the 10th pick in 2017, first round? He took Patrick Mahomes. So in a matter of 4 or 5 years, Andy Reid came in and immediately established a culture and an identity. But the reminder is, you got to have patience. It takes time to get all your personnel. Andy Reid didn't get Mahomes until 2017, and then Mahomes didn't break out until 2 years ago. And here we are now, the Kansas City Chiefs, defending Super Bowl champions, 13-1, getting set to host our Atlanta Falcons tomorrow as a 10.5-point favorite. So there are three things you need for a Falcons turnaround. The new GM and new head coach immediately need to establish a culture and an identity. And then the front office, GM, scouting groups, and even the head coach, if he has a say in the personnel, need to hit home runs in the draft. That's how this thing turns around. It's not about having free agent money available and going out and spending on a running back on a free agent contract. You need to hit in the NFL draft. And that's what Kansas City's been able to do. Excuse me. You look at their roster. I mean, they were gift-wrapped Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the last pick this year in the draft in the first round after winning the Super Bowl. They drafted Mecole Hardman from Georgia. Eric Fisher, the tackle. So Andy Reid continues to just go about finding gems. He really does. And you know, they'll grab a Le'Veon Bell because the rich get richer. They'll grab a Sammy Watkins. But you just look at this team. You know, they got a few free agents on defense, but the nucleus was through the draft, and it took some time. Like, Andy Reid was really, really good, but his first 5 years in Kansas City was kind of more of the same that he had in Philadelphia, where he was really good, but he couldn't get over the top. And then in 2015 and 2016 and 2017, you start stockpiling good drafts together, and all of a sudden this franchise looks like the next dynasty. And our Falcons are going to be up against it tomorrow. No Alex Mack, no Julio Jones, no James Carpenter, shorthanded, not playing for much, Chiefs playing to continue to keep that one seed. But it's just amazing when you look around, you can find examples and blueprints. And I'm not saying Patrick Mahomes, there's another Patrick Mahomes out there. There probably isn't, short of Trevor Lawrence, which you're not going to get your hands on anyway if you're at the Atlanta Falcons. But maybe it's Zach Wilson, the quarterback at BYU. Maybe it's Justin Fields, the quarterback at Ohio State. But it's about hitting on multiple picks. And that's what this front office needs to do. You got to string together a 2017 draft similar to what the New Orleans Saints did when they got Lattimore and Kamara and Ramchek. I mean, they got three all-pros in one draft. Now, it's rare. It's not the rule. It's kind of the exception, but that's what we're looking at. All right. Also, Nick Hale Show, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I got a tweet last night. Somebody sent me a tweet from Marietta saying, Nick, I'm seeing reports that Marvin Lewis is in the mix for NFL head coaching vacancies. Please tell me we're not foolish enough to pursue Marvin Lewis. I will tell you this, guys. Marvin Lewis did a nice job at Arizona State with Herm Edwards on that staff. But there is no chance that this franchise is going down the retread road of Marvin Lewis. Here's Marvin Lewis's body of work in his 16-year run with Cincinnati, which is kind of incredible that you can go 16 years and never win a game in the playoffs, but Marvin Lewis somehow pulled that feat off. Marvin Lewis was 131 and 122 in 16 seasons, just about 52%. He had six double-digit win seasons in 16 years, four division titles, three wild card appearances, seven playoff appearances total out of 16 years. So he was basically in the playoffs one out of every 2 years. And of those seven times he reached the playoffs, he was 0-7, one and done every single time. That would be, I think, an impossible sell to this Atlanta Falcon fan base if they even pursued Marvin Lewis, much less gave him an interview. So Chris from Marietta, who sent me the tweet, I don't have any information. I can't speak on behalf of the franchise, but I would be stunned if he got anything beyond a courtesy call. I don't think that's the path that the Falcons want to take, nor do I think it's the path the Falcons will take. 16 years, he had two quarterbacks, Carson Palmer and Andy Dalton, could not win a playoff game. Now, look, he brought them to stability to some stretch, to some extent. It was a respectable run, but it was like, man, every year you knew the Bengals would be in that Saturday wild card game at 4 o'clock on ESPN, the worst playoff game of the weekend, and the Bengals were going to be there against the Raiders, against the Texans, you name it. And they were going out, one and done. All right, 404-741-0929. So I don't think you got to worry about Marvin Lewis, although I know the Texans have interviewed him. So I know the Texans kind of started this firing the coach thing. Remember, Bill O'Brien was first to go, and then boom, Arthur Smith makes a change. I don't think we will be following in the Texans' footsteps and interviewing Marvin Lewis. All right, coming up next, Emory Hunt from CBS Sports, college football and NFL draft analyst, is going to join us. We'll talk about the Peach Bowl, Georgia-Cincinnati, as well as all things Atlanta Falcons. That's next here on the Nick Hale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We welcome in my man, Emory Hunt from CBS Sports. He's all over Sportsline, CBS Sports HQ, and a guy who's really well-versed both on the college front and the pro front when it comes to football. So we're going to bounce around and talk all sorts of things with the Falcons and the Dogs. And he joins us right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Emory, happy holidays to you and yours. Thanks for a few minutes on Christmas, man.
Same to you and yours, man. I appreciate you having me on.
No question. So let's start with the college front. And, you know, we've been talking a little bit this morning about the Georgia-Cincinnati matchup in the Peach Bowl. I think this is a compelling matchup. I think this is one of the better games outside of the college football playoff. I actually think this game will be closer than the two semifinal playoff games. Two really good defenses, two entertaining quarterbacks. How do you view this matchup, Georgia-Cincinnati?
Yeah, this, you're right. This is going to be a really good game. You look at outside of the on-the-field stuff, what this game means for a program like Cincinnati, the significance of it. Think in terms of what Utah and Alabama did when they were in that Sugar Bowl, when Utah was in the Mountain West Conference, and they finally got an opportunity to play a team from the SEC, and they took it to Alabama. So expect Cincinnati to treat this game like a playoff game, like a championship game. So we're going to see the best of the Bearcats. Their offense has gotten better as the season has gone on, especially in the passing game. And for Georgia, their passing game has gotten better since JT Daniels has taken over, really helped balance out the offense, and their defense starting to get some guys back healthy. So I think you're right. We're in for a very close game, one that should come down to the wire.
You know, let me stay with the game for a moment from the Georgia perspective. JT Daniels in his three starts was fantastic. Almost 900 yards passing, 9 touchdowns, 1 pick. The Georgia offense looked completely different with him at quarterback as opposed to Stetson Bennett. What is your assessment on JT Daniels? Do you think he's going to go pro? I mean, is he a first-round pick, or do we see him back in Athens for one more year?
I think he'll be back in Athens. I think when you look at, you know, his game, you know, it's sort of similar to what we saw from, let's say, a David Green or even an Aaron Murray, someone that just a solid quarterback, even a Jake Fromm. He's along that spectrum. He's not dynamic enough to where you can say this is a first-round type talent, especially when it comes to how he handles pressure. And that's going to be key in this ball game because we know the Bearcats will scheme up some things defensively to get after the quarterback and get him to hold the football a little bit too long. We saw Missouri do something like that earlier in that ball game, and they had some success. So I wouldn't say he's a first-round pick. So I think he also has to stack some really good film together because his film at USC wasn't that good. So if he's able to close out this year playing well like he has played since he took over the starting job and build on that next season in a full regular, hopefully, season of college football with a full off season within that scheme, then we can revisit it and talk about him as a pro prospect. But right now, I think if you're looking at him coming out, he's probably more along the lines of a mid to late round guy.
Emory Hunt, CBS Sports, joining us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. You know, it's funny, as I watched Zach Wilson at BYU probably 3 times in the regular season, and then I saw him in the bowl game on Tuesday night in the Boca Raton Bowl, and he was just off the charts good. Latest CBSSports.com mock draft has him skyrocketing up to the 2nd overall pick to the New York Jets. You know, it's interesting is, you know, now all of a sudden Zach Wilson has eclipsed Justin Fields because Justin Fields, you know, it was a little bit of a sluggish start and a little bit of a struggle against Indiana and Northwestern. Zach Wilson, if the Atlanta Falcons took him at number 4, what would your reaction be to that?
You know, I wouldn't be surprised that it would happen because you look at Matt Ryan and how old he is. And I get it. Some quarterbacks are playing into their 40s. But, you know, at some point you have to plan for the future. And there's a way for them to be able to get out of Matt Ryan's contract in maybe a year or two, I guess. So you want to have a plan in place, and there's no downside to taking someone that you feel as though that has some upside, that still has some growth left in this game. And I think it's better to take one of these quarterbacks that's an underclassman as opposed to a senior, because as a senior, you're close to a finished product, and there's no real growth that takes place. So if you're looking at a Trey Lance or a Justin Fields or a Zach Wilson, you know, that's something that could be attractive to a team like Atlanta, who has a little bit of wiggle room to be able to stash a guy, let him groom, develop, and be able to succeed, you know, Matt Ryan. And I think that's going to be something that we're going to see the Falcons really think long and hard about if they're picking that high in the draft.
You know, let's go to Justin Fields, because obviously a lot of Falcons fans who also root for the Georgia Bulldogs would love to see a homecoming of sorts with Justin Fields at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It feels like, you know, the guy couldn't do any wrong to start the season. He was completing like 85-90% of his passes. And then all of a sudden you face some good defenses, and of course the numbers are going to go down a little bit. I'm not down on Justin Fields. I think he's going to be a fantastic pro. And I'm seeing guys like Justin Herbert come in and have success. is the only knock against Fields right now that he holds on to the ball a little bit too long and maybe doesn't process things as quickly as Trevor Lawrence?
You know what's interesting about that, and it's funny, and I tweeted this out during the game, it's always interesting to see who gets the he's holding the ball too long juxtaposed to the no one's getting open for him, you know, line. It all depends on which quarterback you like you're going to use to defend, right? And so I went back and watched the All-22 of that Northwestern game, and you have to give a ton of credit to Northwestern's defense. They had a terrific game plan called in the secondary. They played a lot of tight zone coverage, so kind of forced you to hold the ball a little bit too long. And on the flip side, offensively for Ohio State, just because you're in the route doesn't necessarily mean you're in the progression. So you may have guys just strictly running clear out routes, and only one target is the primary target on the play. So it kind of forces your hand if you're Justin Fields. And people forget what he did last year in the playoffs against Clemson. If Olave runs the right route, that's a completion, and we're probably talking about Ohio State versus Alabama in the LSU in the college championship, as opposed to Clemson and LSU. So it's not like this guy just forgot how to play football. I just think a lot of times we see, I hate to say draft Twitter, but a lot of those guys and people amongst that same, you know, evaluators tend to over-talk prospects or get tired of talking about the same prospects and can't wait for someone new to jump into the conversation. Because it's funny, I told people about Zach Wilson 3 years ago during that bowl game against, it was the New Mexico Bowl, where he was out there lighting it up. And if you really want to look at what Zach Wilson's potential could be, go back and look at that USC game last year. That tells you all you need to know. So I still think he's a terrific prospect. And it's okay to have three terrific prospects at the position. You want that type of depth at the position going into a draft. So I think we have three tremendous prospects. And as more guys start to come out, we'll find out some more. But you don't have to knock one guy to elevate another. All three can be really good.
Yeah, I mean, I would be ecstatic with any of those guys, including Trey Lance, in that conversation. And it leads me to the next question. You know, we're looking at the league now, and we're seeing more athleticism and more mobility at the quarterback position than we've ever seen. I still think when push comes to shove, you need to be able to beat people through the pocket, from the pocket, dissecting a defense, you know, going through your progressions. That formula has withstood the test of time. But you also can't be a statue anymore, especially if you're playing behind a fragile offensive line. Are you at the point now where it's more 50-50? Like, yeah, I love a pocket guy, but if I can get the mobile guy, I'm going for it?
I've always been of the school of thought that give me the best 11 out there on the field. And if my best 11, one of my best 11 is a guy that can do more with the football in his hands at a key position, I want him there as well. So I've always been a proponent of putting the mobile guy back there at quarterback because it changes the math defensively. It's funny to see the league come around to it now when they've shut the door on so many potential talents at that position over history. So that's why the numbers and the history and the rhetoric is skewed a little bit in that regard when people say things like, oh, well, you have to win from the pocket time and time again. It's shown, well, yeah, that's because only certain type of quarterbacks have been allowed to play that position. We don't know what would have happened if a Charlie Ward gets that position in 93 as opposed to going to play a decade plus in the NBA. We don't know what happens, you know, if guys that were forced to change positions can stay at the quarterback position. And you're right. Now you have to be able to move. And the good thing about that is because it changes what defenses try to do to gain an advantage. Once we went to this, everything had to be speed and aggressiveness, and it's the speed game and speed kills, and you saw defensive linemen, outside linebackers become defensive ends, safety become outside linebackers. Your offense was a little bit slower to now where you add a mobile guy back there. You don't have to be Lamar Jackson. When we say mobile, we're talking about a guy that can get out of the way. You talk about Aaron Rodgers-type mobility. That's the mobile quarterback, and it runs the spectrum, but you have to be able to move and evade pressure in today's game more so than you did, let's say, 20 years ago. And if you have someone that can't do that, you're limiting your offense's potential.
Yeah, totally agree with you. Emory Hunt, CBS Sports, is with us. You got to have a guy that poses that ability to move. I would just call it functional mobility. Just don't be like Phillip Rivers, where you're basically a sitting duck back there. You know, you look at the Falcons, and the new GM's going to come in, the new head coach is going to come in. It's a new era of Falcons football, and there's a lot of holes on this team. So how do you balance out, if you're sitting there with the fourth overall pick, you're saying, okay, I need a quarterback long term. I need a pass rusher. I definitely need offensive linemen. We need a tight end. We need a running back. I mean, the Falcons have so many holes. How do you balance out Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, Trey Lance versus somebody who you might have higher on your board with a greater draft grade, like a Kyle Pitts or a Micah Parsons or Penei Sewell? Like, how do you balance out the importance of getting a quarterback, but also if you grade another position higher, you got to take that guy, right?
You know, that's a great question, man. And I think that's the challenge of having to be a GM. And I also believe it would tie into me personally. Let's say if I'm a head coach and I have a running back background, right? And I look at what we need on this team and I'm thinking, okay, I can coach up the backs. So I can bypass the back. Unless he's a Saquon Barkley, where he's a special talent, then you take him. But if I'm looking at the position or the side of the ball where my expertise lies, if you're a defensive head coach, you think I can get the most out of my defense, so I can't pass on the opportunity to take the quarterback. If you're an offensive guy and you're looking at, okay, I can coach the quarterback and I can develop a guy, but I can't pass up on an impact player that can help the quarterback be successful, and that could be Kyle Pitts. Or if I want to just go in and get the best player on my board, and that player just so happens to be Micah Parsons, I'm going to go grab him. Now, would I grab him at the expense of, the lack of development for Michael Walker or Lewakin? I want those guys to continue to grow and develop in their roles. They're doing solid jobs for me. I don't want to throw another guy in there and kind of take one guy away. So there's many different ways you can go about it, but I also believe that it'll ultimately come down to who is the best player on your draft board, regardless of position. So you want to, there's no downside to having talent. I know the Bucks right now are showing you that it's tough to manage all that, but for the most part, if you have a talented team, you'll be in a good situation. No matter who's out there on the field, but I would be hard pressed to bypass the best player that's on my overall draft board, whoever that guy may be.
I like it. Emery Hunt, final one for you. I know you also do some work with Sportsline. I'm going to do my picks in the next segment. Give me your favorite bowl bet that you have right now, or an NFL Week 16 bet that you like.
Louisiana minus 13, obviously, over UTSA. My Raging Cajuns do a great job on both sides of the line of scrimmage. And in this ball game against UTSA, I do feel as though they have to one-stop Sincere McCormick, who was a tremendous tailback. He's going to be a pro player. We're going to be talking about next year. This guy was outstanding this season. For a good stretch, he led the nation in rushing. But on the other side of the ball, the passing game with Levi Lewis and the development of guys like Peter LeBlanc at wide receiver and that three-headed monster they have in the backfield with the emergence of that freshman tailback, Chris Smith, who is a All-American punt returner. So you're seeing the offense grow. A lot of these guys are starting to come back, are saying they're coming back for next year. So this is going to be a good team this season and an even better team next year. They were, 9-1 right now or 10-1 right now, I believe, and they're going to come back next year. This could be a team that we could see push for that New Year's Six bowl game next year. So I would say lay those 13 points with the Cajuns.
All right, Emery Hunt, check him out, CBS Sports HQ, CBS Sports Line. You can follow him on Twitter at FBallGamePlan. That's Football Game Plan. Great stuff, Emery. Happy holidays, and thank you for the time.
Appreciate you, man. Thanks a lot. Happy holidays to you and yours.
You got it. All right, Heisman finalists have been announced. We are down to four. How it should play out compared to how it will play out. Hour two of the Nick Kale Show next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.